The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show.
Because of a legal snafu, today the role of Eric will be played by Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
And the role of Sonia Sotomayor will be played by the late Minnie Pearl. And now your host,
Mr. Lumpy Jinglepants.
Take it away, Lumpy.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back. This is what we like to call Hour 2. It's a quirk of mine. I just like to call it Hour 2. It does follow Hour 1, so technically I'm right. But it's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm continuing my conversation with David Horowitz, who has a new book out called Blitz. And David, later on today, I'm talking to Bob Woodson. I want to talk to you a tiny bit about this New York Times project. I mean, the Times, I have to say, I've never seen anything like they've gone off the cliff. But the 1619 so-called project that they have pushed out there, many historians are pushing back against it. It's a fundamentally anti-American narrative. It's really crazy, but I know you touch upon it in your book Blitz.
Yeah. Well, the New York Times editorial board has a number of extremist racists on it. The 1619 Project, first of all, the author of it is a Black racist named Nicole Hannah-Jones, who got a MacArthur Genius Award for her efforts. She's a pro-Castro leftist, and she's a historical illiterate. And she claims that the 1776, the founders revolted against England to protect slavery. But she doesn't explain how they took the whole, the West, all the territories in the West, and made them free. A bigger landmass than the existing United States. And she's written things, or the actually founding essay is something like America's a democracy because Black people made it so. Well, you know, to buy that, you would have to believe that Blacks wrote the Declaration of Independence, that they that 350,000 Black Union soldiers freed the slaves, that Blacks wrote the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, that Blacks were responsible for the Civil Rights Acts.
It kind of messes up the narrative when you realize that white people were behind all of these wonderful...
But you have to realize what a crime against this country. The Times and the Pulitzer Foundation, which is also a sponsor, have committed. And of course, they have the power now because they have, you have all these communist teacher unions, and I use that word advisedly. It's now in 3,500 schools already. It's only been out months, this project. The project is to say that, to claim the lie that the American founding was not 1776, which is the fountainhead of freedom in the world. The statement that all men are created equal and that God gave every individual an inalienable right to liberty. That's why the slaves are freed, in addition to the 350,000 Union soldiers, mainly white, who gave their lives. Erase that and make the founding 1619, when they say 20 slaves, Black slaves, were imported into the colony of Virginia. Well, first of all, if they were enslaved, or actually they were indentured servants, and slavery, and I'm quoting here from Nell Painter, who's a very famous African-American and a leftist historian. Virginia, it was outlawed, slavery in Virginia in 1619, until the end of the 17th century. But they were also indentured servants. Almost 100% of the labor in Virginia was indentured servitude. It means that you served without pay for 7 years.
But of course, many, many, many indentured servants were white, obviously.
Oh, most of them.
Most of them were white. They all got freed.
Yeah. So this is just a vicious, I mean, if Iran's psychological warfare unit had put out the 1619 project, it would make sense. Or if China or if Stalin's Russia did it. But the New York Times, the Pulitzer Foundation, and the whole intellectual establishment.
Well, look, David, you said it earlier.
We're talking about the Atlantic Monthly, the New Yorker Magazine.
Yeah.
They've all prostituted themselves to this vicious anti-American propaganda. We are in a civil war now for what this country is. Is it going to be a totalitarian country ruled by anti-white racists, which is what their agenda is? Or is it going to be America? That's what the battle is.
David, unfortunately, I agree with you, and I have said this myself, that we are, in fact, we're in a war. And it's strange because we're in a civil war, and we are effectively now in a Cold War with China. And there are people on the wrong side of the issue in this civil war who are siding with our enemies, whether it's China or Iran.
China.
Or whoever it is. And how do you see this playing itself out? You do believe the president will win re-election. He does seem to have the will to fight. But what is it that we can do? When you say that, 3,500 schools have adopted this sick, false curriculum of the 1619 Project, I mean, how can we fight?
Well, I think, look, conservatives are too civilized, if I may say that. They're too tolerant. They're too, and they, as conservatives, they expect people to be bad. They understand, and especially religious conservatives understand that the flaw is in us, that we are prone to evil and to, cheating, lying, stealing, and so forth. So we're the problem. So they accept way too much. And they also are averse to politics. Conservatives are not involved in politics. Since Trump, they have definitely become a hell of a lot more involved. But they tend to say a pox on everybody's house. We'll focus on the next world.
Right.
People have to get involved and they have to fight at every level. If you know what's going on in your kindergarten, your kid's kindergarten classroom and first grade, if you understand they're being taught that whites are racists, if you're being understand that they're being taught that little kids without pubic hair are being taught that little boys can become little girls by having their penises cut off, which is being taught in our school system, you need to get roused and you need to fight at every level.
I tell you, this is why I love you, because this is basically what I say. I mean, if people don't get angry, the most natural, healthy response is anger, and is to say, this is unjust, this is sick, this is a travesty, this is un-American, it's inhuman, and you've got to do something. And I agree with you that, the way you put it, you say that, the Republicans or conservatives are too civilized. You don't really mean that, of course. What you really mean is they're unwilling to fight when it is the most civilized thing to do is to fight for what is right.
You need to call a spade when you see.
Well, I mean, here's
the mentality of the left. I did a piece called Nancy Pelosi's Jesus Complex. She was interviewed by, this happened a couple of weeks ago. She was interviewed by Joy Ann Reid, who said, in your coronavirus, the next legislation, are you going to include legislation to free prisoners, criminals, convicted criminals? And Pelosi's answer was, our caucus is very devoted to the Gospel of Matthew. In other words,
he said instead that? Of can you imagine Matthew, this? Can you imagine?
Instead of, absolutely I can. In other words, here's the leader of the party of hate in our country. The Democratic Party is a party of hate. That's all it's operating on. And And she thinks she's the head of the party of Jesus. Now, every radical thinks of themselves as a god. I mean, that's the problem.
I hate to cut you off. We're going to be right back. We've got more with David Horowitz. Don't go away. Hey, folks, welcome back. Before I continue my conversation with David Horowitz, I want to remind you, you have an obligation. It's not a constitutional obligation. It's not a legal obligation. But just because I say it's an obligation, to go to MetaxasTalk.com, you'll see the banner for Prison Fellowship Angel Tree. As you know, Chuck Colson was a dear friend of mine, and I really believe what he talks about when he says that, you know, we're supposed to care for the prisoners in a civilized society. You do that and you care for their kids. You understand that if you want to invest in the future, you invest in the children of those who are incarcerated. So please go to MetaxasTalk.com, click on the banner, do what you can for these kids. Angel Tree Camp, if possible. And if not, we're sending them care packages. You can participate in that, MetaxasTalk.com. David,
can I ask, who's the politician who's done the most for prisoners in our lifetime? Trump, the First Step Act. No Republican would have supported that to get release for thousands of mainly black prisoners, but Trump did it, and they call him a racist. Now I want to go back to.
But before we go, just why do you say that other Republicans wouldn't have gotten behind the First Step Act?
Because they didn't. Because I'm as part of the Republican conversation, because Republicans would say these people are in jail for a reason. Unfortunately, there are things wrong with our criminal justice system, but it's Trump who took the chance and put together the coalition. Back to Nancy Pelosi and her Jesus complex, because there's a psychological term for this too.
Yeah.
All these radicals, every leading candidate for the Democratic nomination, whether it's Elizabeth Warren or Cory Booker or Kamala Harris, or it doesn't matter. Every one of them wants to change the world. They're talking about $100 trillion programs, about confiscating all automobiles, about changing our way of life, about ending inequality. How could you end inequality when people are so unequal? You know, it's not a racial thing. People are just unequal. I mean, unless you think you can play basketball like Michael Jordan or LeBron James, they're going to make more money than you. They're more entertaining. More people want to see them. But they want to change the world. Those are godlike powers. You can't create a new creation. And it explains their mentality, which is sociopathic. If you look up sociopathic personality on the internet, you will see, one, it's an elevated sense of self, thinking that you are godlike, the way Nancy Pelosi does, thinking that you are Jesus, or very devoted to Jesus when you're a hypocritical liar and character destroyer. She's a character assassin. I won't go on about Nancy.
But
the second you have this elevated sense of yourself, it's why you don't give a damn about other people. Nancy Pelosi, take her, let the prisoners run loose. She lives, she makes, what is she, has, she's worth $200 million. She lives in a mansion in Pacific Heights with homeless people strewn down the streets. She lives behind walls and gates. She has, you know, security agents, private ones, government ones. So there's no consequence to her of freeing all these prisoners. Whereas while Gavin Newsom, her nephew, and the governor of California.
Her nephew?
Oh, it's a whole incestuous
family. Wait a minute. Gavin Newsom is Nancy Pelosi's nephew?
Yeah, that's the dynasty that controls.
Honestly, I have to plead ignorance on that one.
Jerry Brown, the Browns are part of it. It's the California dynasty that rules the Democratic Party and the state. But you don't give it, you don't, they don't care about, they don't care about what happens to Black people in the inner city because of their disgusting welfare policies. They've driven Black fathers out of the home.
Yeah.
For now 50 years.
Well, listen,
the Democrats, the poverty you see in the inner city, the crime, the Democrats are responsible for.
This is why you and I were talking earlier about when did the party, because I think there are a lot of people listening maybe to this program who they wouldn't say they're conservatives or Republicans, but I want them in particular to understand that the Democratic Party, which used to have some wonderful principled people in it, has been given over to something that is radically different from, for example, Senator Moynihan had the guts in the mid-60s to say that it's the breakdown of the Black family that is destroying Blacks. We need to address this. And
Joe Lieberman is a principled Democrat.
Very principled.
He's irrelevant to the Democratic Party. It started with Tom Hayden and Jane Fonda leading it. You have to understand the 60s left. They hated America and they wanted to burn it down. That's who the left of the 60s is. And they marched into the Democratic Party and over the course of 50 years took it over. Barack Obama is one of them. I mean, he was raised the same way I was, by communists, but he never left the communist movement.
I mean,
They talk a good game. You know, Joseph Stalin, there was a communist international. And Joseph Stalin, of course, was the head. It's called the Common Form. And they had a newspaper. And he gave it its title, For a Lasting Peace for a People's Democracy, this mass murderer. That's how the left thinks and talks.
Well, this is the thing. And I think a lot of times my frustration is, you know, as you know, we've talked about this. I mean, by going to Yale University, for example, I kind of drank this Kool-Aid. And there are so many good young people who they drank the Kool-Aid. They're looking at their phones. They're getting their news from their phones. And it is filtered in such a way that they're never hearing our side of the story. They're never hearing what we're talking about. And I have to say that that's my biggest concern for the country, is that you still have CNN and Politico and a lot of these other former news organizations that have become propagandists against Trump and anything he stands for and against the country and for China. That to me is that's where the real battle is ultimately.
So when I was in college, I went to Columbia. The liberal professors were actually liberals. And they used to stress that the important thing is process, due process. And the most frightening thing is the way the Democrats and everybody on the left has totally abandoned the process. So suppressing, I mean, our universities are one-party states. I won't even go to one anymore. But my last experience was so terrible. Where, you know, they organized a riot inside my lecture, and the vice president in charge of student affairs is supposed to be defending a university atmosphere. He thought it was very funny, their demonstrations.
But don't you find it funny, though, that this started? I mean, you mentioned this earlier. It started in 1968 when the students took over Columbia, your alma mater. The fact of the matter is, the faculty and the administration, if they had had any guts, any courage, they would have said, this will not stand here. But they let them get away with it. And we've been dealing with this for five decades.
I spent the 60s as a radical. You asked me what my beliefs were in the 60s. I would have said I'm a Marxist revolutionary. I was bewildered by the fact that they didn't expel students that occupied buildings.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
But it's a privilege. Everything for them is a right. No, it's a privilege. The right is to be left alone by your government.
Doesn't it tell you something, though, about how leaders themselves, I mean, that you would think that the leaders of a university would subscribe to certain basics and that they would have some guts to defend what's right, to defend the students that aren't involved in this kind of nonsense. And to me, that's kind of, it's, we haven't turned the page. It's been five decades and we still have this kind of thing going on. People don't have the guts at these colleges, at Yale, which a couple of years ago, you know, the ridiculousness that went on there. No one was expelled. I mean, it's just, it's terrible. Absolutely.
They've ruined these kids. A lot of them are minority kids who are there on scholarship. So they have this incredible privilege of, well, of course, not a privilege.
They're not people. It's reverse racism. It's horrific. Yeah. Absolutely.
My late great partner, Peter Collier, once said that the profile, the employment profile of a college president these days is a cross between Saul Alinsky and Neville Chamberlain.
Oh, well, we're going to have to leave it there. That's a horrifying but memorable.
I think they're the most despicable people on the planet.
Well, I hate agreeing with this kind of stuff, but I must. David, it's just a joy to speak with you. We will have you back as soon as possible. Congratulations, folks. Great. The book is Blitz by David Horowitz. Don't miss it. And we'll be right back with Bob Woodson.
When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be. And in my hour of darkness, she is standing right in front of me, speaking words of wisdom. Let it be.
Christian best-selling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all: does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot, because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life, for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com. Hey there, folks. We have a special treat for you right now. Don't thank me now. I get to talk to our friend Bob Woodson of the Woodson Center. Bob Woodson, welcome to this program.
Pleased to be here again.
Listen, I want to get right to it. The 1619 Project is a joke. You have spoken out against it. I wanted to get you on today because the Pulitzer Prize Committee has given a Pulitzer Prize to the folks who put together this ridiculousness. What is your perspective? And tell us about the project that you have put together to counter this.
Well, what they've done is just ratify Hate America First. That's what 1619 is all about. Nicole Hannah Jones has organized a group of primarily Black journalists to really to suggest that the real founding of America, 1619, not 1776. And what she concludes in her essays is that that America was founded for the propagation of slavery, and therefore the founders erred, and that what they preached and wrote was a false doctrine.
You're cutting off the top of your head, Bob. It's very important.
I'm sorry. Okay.
I like you, so I'm going to interrupt you when we do that.
No, that's fine. So,
Say that again. Get to the last part of that, because people need to understand how crazy this is, what is being ratified by the Pulitzer Prize Committee.
The Pulitzer Prize Committee is using a black journalist for the New York Times who's authored a series of essays that she wrote, the first one, 1619, that postures that America is founded on slavery and therefore its legitimate birthday is 1619 when slaves first arrived here instead of 1776. In other words, what they're doing is using the history of slavery as a bludgeon against this country. And so what some of us have done is organized a group of black scholars and activists to challenge this false principle by saying and giving proof that America was founded by 1776 and America's offers a promise. Slavery was America's birth defect. No one, not a nation, should be defined by its troubles in its past. But America should be defined by its promise, freedom and justice for all. And that's what Americans, black Americans over the centuries have fought and died to defend this nation. And we are going to continue defending it today.
Now, Bob, you've been a black man for most of your life. Is that true?
That's true. That's okay. What I heard.
So you bring a perspective, obviously, a legitimacy to this that I could never do because I have been white for most of my life, not all of my life, but most of my life, I've identified as white. You love this country despite the flaws of this country. And I would say the same thing, that anybody who doesn't want to see the flaws is wrong. We've got to look at our flaws so that we can redeem what needs redeeming, so we can repent of what needs repenting of. But there are people like you mentioned the woman, Nicole Hannah-Jones, who was behind this, who really seem somehow to want to give themselves permission to hate America, to say that America can never be good. It has always been bad. It's been bad from the beginning. It's a very bizarre perspective, but that negative narrative has taken hold on the left, hasn't it?
It has. Well, she's a product of the university system who over the past few decades have denigrated capitalism and denigrated the values. So she's really, I think, a pawn of this larger narrative that America, hate America first. So I'm not surprised that they gave her the Pulitzer. But as a civil rights veteran, my father fought in the First World War in Germany.
Wow.
And so this is the only nation on the face of the earth that ever had an Emancipation Proclamation and fought a war to end slavery. And so therefore, many of us want to continue that tradition and fight for it. And that's why we have mobilizing black scholars and activists. We have a cadre of low-income black grassroots leaders who are giving, they are living testament that the values of our founders have the consequence of producing a superior life. Our values have, and that's what we have to do, Eric. It cannot just be writing papers and think tanks. We have to go into the trenches and bring people into the to fold to demonstrate that America should be defined by its promise, not its birth defect of slavery.
Well, so tell us then about the 1776 project that you have started here. What is the website for that, first of all?
It's 1776unites.com with an S.
1776unites.
We have assembled some of the most talented young black scholars and black activists, not just black, but primarily black activists who come together and they've done research that shows when whites were at their worst, blacks were at their best. There were 20 blacks who were born slaves who died millionaires. And they used the instruments of the free enterprise system to accomplish such things. So we have a whole cadre of historians, economists, business leaders, grassroots leaders who are coming together and writing essays. And these essays are published on our website. And we give proof positive that the problems facing Black America today have nothing to do with a legacy of slavery and discrimination as reported by the 1619 Project.
I want to keep you for the next segment, if I can, Bob. Folks, you can go to 1776unites.com, 1776unites.com. We'll be right back with Bob Woodson. Don't go away. Who are you? Hey, folks, welcome back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm Eric Metaxas, and this is the show. And I have the privilege right now of speaking to Bob Woodson. Bob, what is the website for the Woodson Center? Because I want people to go and visit that and find out who you are and what you're doing. It's more than we can cover in a few minutes here.
Right. It's woodsoncenter.org. www.woodsoncenter.org. And that will take you to our 1776 Unites website as well.
Yes.
Woodsoncenter.org.
And I think all Black Americans and all non-Black Americans, and that's covering a lot of people, need to go to woodsoncenter.org. A lot of people, I mean, part of the reason I do this program is that, you know, I will discover someone and I will say, how is it possible that I didn't know Bob Woodson all these years and the great work that you're doing? And then the first thing I want to do is I want my audience to know about you. So you've been on here a couple of times in our studio. Now you've got your own studio. You got trees in the background. I'm a little jealous. I don't think you need to flaunt your home, okay, on this video. But let me tell you right now, seriously, Bob, Americans need to know that there are Blacks like you who have consistently been speaking out from a pro-American viewpoint. You know, you don't sugarcoat the sins of the country. But what do you make of the fact that we've come to a place in America, not just where these things are going on, but where you have the New York Times, which used to be a left wing, but mostly reputable news organization. And now you have the Pulitzer Prize Committee ratifying absolute ridiculousness. I mean, they have put their muscle and their name and their brand behind something that you and I know is frankly wrong. It's not just that we disagree with it, that it's based on lies. It's based on misunderstandings of history. And they have put their weight behind this. Do you think that it's just a desperation to be relevant? What do you suppose could get them behind this kind of thing?
I really do. Dietrich Bonhoeffer said that one of the worst phenomena to deal with human is not malice, because you can challenge malice with violence. It's folly. Is when people genuinely believe they are acting and promoting your interests when they are destroying you with a helping hand. And that's what's happening. But also conservatives have to step up and realize that the pushback against that cannot just be limited to writing white papers and arguing on talk television. They have to come in, roll up their sleeves, and join forces with grassroots leaders in these neighborhoods that are living testament that of the values. We must join hand. They are insurgents. The qualities that make these insurgents qualified is that their actions, but it also makes them invisible. The reason that you don't know about me, because I'm too busy doing the work. And people who are legitimately serving America are not trying to get on television or get TV shows. And so it's incumbent upon conservatives also to stop acting with such appeasement. I'm upset when I hear that the president of the United States during the pandemic is picking up the phone and calling Al Sharpton.
Are you kidding?
No, and I think that that's wrong, because what happens is that too many conservatives just get weak in the knees. They get the starch goes out of their shorts when it comes to race, and instead of standing up to these race hustlers and calling them for what they are, or at least supporting those of us who are willing to stand up and challenge them, we need the support of conservatives so that we can be the voice that is challenging these race hustlers, because they cannot dismiss us.
There are people I know in the current administration who listen to this program sometimes, and it would be my greatest privilege to think that some of them listening right now would have just been introduced to you and to the Woodson Center, because as you just said, we really oftentimes, even unwittingly, we buy into this narrative, or we're kind of legitimizing people like Al Sharpton in the name of being civil. And I think that we really do have to understand that folks like Sharpton, they have been on the record as enemies of what we believe in. And we've come to a pass right now where we need to understand what's at stake. It's why I wanted to talk to you particularly, because you have really put your life into this.
Yeah, when when I've had an opportunity to debate them, Charles Hamilton, who wrote Black Power with Stokely Carmichael, I debated him before a group of 1,000 Black laborites, and they gave me a standing ovation. There was no debate. And so what happens is the civil rights leadership knows that we have that kind of impact, so I don't get invitations to go back. And right. I was on Black News Network for 3 hours debating some other people, and they said, well, when the phones, let's see what the listeners say. 7-1 for 3 hours who called in agreed with what I'm telling you. I was never invited back. And so the reality is the rank and file Black folks who are going to work every day, raising families, they don't go to get up every day and say, wonder what white folks going to do it to us a day. That is just not the attitude that most Blacks feel, but it's incumbent upon, and I'm just blessed, Eric, that you have given me and therefore them an opportunity to speak for themselves. And I say, bless you for that.
Well, as I say, when I met you a couple of years ago, I was just astounded that I had been unaware of you until that time. And, you know, this happens to me over and over in my life that I discover something I hadn't seen before. And my first emotion is shame. Like, what is wrong with me? How have I missed this? And the second thing is I want to make everyone else feel ashamed and say, hey, you need to check out this because I've just noticed this. But, you know, the Woodson Center, you said the website is woodsoncenter.org. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
I can only imagine, you know, the fear on the leftist race hustlers, as you put it, if voices like yours and Candace Owens's get out there, we know that the Democratic Party is going to be in big trouble. And so it's really important, I think, for people to do what they can to hear your side of the story. We're out of time, Bob, but I just, it's a privilege to have you on. We'll have you back as often as possible. As you know, I want to tell people to go to the woodsoncenter.org. If you go to woodsoncenter.org, it'll lead you to 1776unites.com. Bob, I'm just grateful to you. Thank you for interrupting your time on your beautiful porch to talk to me and my audience. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Eric.
God bless you. All right, folks, stick around.
Every day she takes a morning bath, she wets her hair, wraps a towel around her as she's heading for the bedroom chair. It's just another day.
Hey, folks, welcome back. This is the final segment of today's 2 hours of the Eric Metaxas Show. I got to tell you, I am just amazed. Our guests today, now, by the way, you can listen to this anytime. We post all this stuff, but you can also see there's a YouTube version. We've got a channel at YouTube. It is the Eric Metaxas Show channel on YouTube. And you can see what David Horowitz looks like, what he's wearing today. You can see what Bob Woodson looks like, where he is. I just think it's fun. You can subscribe to our YouTube channel. I recommend it. It is free. So you can check it out. And then you can see all the other videos. Obviously, this is a radio program, but we're conducting it like a TV program because we can. There's no law against it. Alvin, I have to mention this thing we're doing called giving masks. Or maybe,
oh, yeah.
Maybe one of you can supply the details, you or Chris Himes.
Chris, did you want to, or shall I do the? We haven't heard
Chris
from Chris
is champing
today.
At the bit to talk about giving masks.com.
All I know is I don't want to be mask shamed. So if you're going to have to get a mask, this seems like a good place to get them. But Alvin, you can probably.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
These are the best masks to get. That's why we're talking about it. Givingmasks.com.
That's right.
But I think Alvin, you were just going to.
Yeah. Givingmasks.com. Givingmasks.com/Eric. And whenever you buy a mask, they give it then on to worthy people. Of course, the worthy people in the front lines are the doctors and the first responders.
You just said it in a way that was confusing, so I'm gonna interrupt and say
I'm good at that.
What I think you meant to say was that if you need great masks, go to givingmasks.com/Eric. These are really high quality masks. But for every box of masks that you buy, they will donate a similar box of masks to people on the front lines. And the front lines, we've chosen New York Presbyterian Hospital. So you're doing two things. You're getting very high quality masks, because right now I think we're living at a time where people are pretty much going to be wearing masks, you know, everywhere. So
probably up until Halloween, then they'll take their masks off.
That was funny. See, you're funny. I keep telling you, you need to be on the radio. So givingmasks.com/Eric. And honestly, folks, these are like the best kind of masks if you're looking for masks, but even better, the folks at givingmasks.com/Eric, they're going to donate a box of the masks for every box of masks that you buy. Oh my goodness. I got to say this too. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, if you're listening to this Tuesday, tomorrow's Wednesday. Wednesday night, tomorrow night, I'm doing a Facebook Live with Adam Carolla and Dennis Prager. You go to my Facebook page. This is exciting. Tomorrow night, I'm interviewing them about No Safe Spaces. And by the way, if you watch No Safe Spaces, use the code Eric, nosafespaces.com.
Actually, you use the code SAVE25 for that, but for Patterns of Evidence, you use...
Oh, I'm sorry. What could be more confusing or less interesting than the codes for these things? But actually, it's important. It's important. All this stuff is important. We have to talk about it, but we choose to talk about it. Believe me. Patternsofevidence.com. You can save 25% by using the code SAVE25. Patternsofevidence.com. Those are three movies. Use the code Eric. I think we're going to be out of time quickly. Chris and Albin, is there anything we're forgetting before we go? This is the end of the. It's the end of the end of the end. Well, I guess let me say,
drink Honor Bound coffee.
What's that?
Honor Bound coffee. Drink it, baby. Drink it.
Oh yeah. Well, honorboundcoffee.com. You know that every penny of profits goes to help military families, and so I believe in the coffee just because it's delicious. But if you have to choose what coffee to drink, and you can help military families, pretty amazing. Anyway. We're done for today. Thanks for bearing with us. I need a new wig adhesive. I'm going to do that right now. We'll catch you tomorrow.